You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily podcast on the Toronto Blue Jays, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to Locked On Blue Jays, your daily dose of Toronto Blue Jays talk directly into your headspace, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, AJ Andrews of ChaseFromTheCouch.com, and the second half of this two-part episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms, Locker Room, changing the way we talk about sports. I ran out of steam last night, so I know this is happening during the finale of the Phillies-Blue Jays series, but hey, Chase Anderson's inability to pitch is finally benefiting the Blue Jays instead of all the times it hurt the Blue Jays in 2020. Literally, as I'm recording this, he's just been yanked for David Hale with the bases loaded. So there is a chance he could be charged with 8 runs here. So in that spirit, we bring you the second half of my crossover episode with Dan Wilson of Locked On Phillies. If you checked out the first episode, greatly appreciate it. In this one, we kind of talk about the future for both teams this season. And Dan asked me a question that I think y'all know is going to get me riled. So I go off a little bit in the latter half of this podcast. So there's still some goodness in here for you. So thanks for checking this out and enjoy. Well, if nothing else, I can offer you the comforting fact that Miami's playing the Dodgers this weekend and Atlanta's on the road at Milwaukee, so it's very likely the Phillies are still going to be in second place in the division no matter what happens.
Yeah, no one's running away with this National League East. Like, it's every fan base in the NL East has complaints about their own team, and this was supposed to be the best division in baseball and shaping up like the worst. And so that is kind of the funny aspect to it right now, is that I don't expect anyone's going to be, I mean, at this rate, everyone's going to be in it when the trade deadline comes and everyone's going to be treading water. I do eventually expect maybe a team like the Nationals to fall off here a little bit. They already did it. They're starting to do it a little bit. They're 5 games out, but it's the tightest division, at least in the National League, and I believe in all of baseball top to bottom, because no one's that great and no one has proven that bad. And that's frankly math, because a lot of the games have been played amongst each other.
I've already heard the Max Scherzer to Toronto rumors starting up, and I don't need any part of it. Like, we bombed Scherzer when he faced Toronto, and the only upside for Scherzer being in Toronto is he doesn't have to worry about facing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in that instance. But I would, like, as much respect as I have for Scherzer, I don't know if the Nationals are going to be able to move him if they are a seller at the deadline. Not when there are more attractive pieces like Herman Marquez in Colorado, or if the Twins start unloading, because my God, Minnesota is so bad. Like, I don't know how they've fallen off a cliff this hard, but yeah. Also, On the prospect of talking about players who were linked to Toronto that I wish weren't linked to Toronto, how's JT Realmuto doing? I know he's on the IL, so he's going to miss this series, which, thank you, Alanis, for that. But he's been such a big part of the offense. It's essentially been him and Bryce and, you know, Gene Segura when healthy.
Sometimes Hoskins, it's like, pick the week on Hoskins. He's either really good or goes away. Yeah, so Realmuto the other day gets knocked out of the game. A foul ball hits him right in the knee, looked quite painful. He exited for precautionary reasons. They didn't think, at first Girardi was like, no, it doesn't seem like he's going to need an IL stint. And then the following, he felt sick during the game on Wednesday, and in the world we live in, he entered COVID protocol. Now, he took a couple of tests, I believe it was yesterday was the word, and none of them came back positive, but he does have to enter protocol to rejoin the team. So for now, he is on the COVID IL, which apparently has nothing to do with the knee. They don't think it seems to be especially serious. The ironic part about it is this is given starts to Andrew Knapp the past couple of days, And he, I mean, he's quickly earning the title of like the best backup catcher in baseball. This guy's going to be a starter at some point. He used to be a punchline here in Philly because it was like an automatic strikeout every time he'd step up. And he's come through already with a couple of big hits. He calls a good game. All of the pitchers speak very highly of him. So I'm not trying to say that he's JT Realmuto or it's like, hey, take your time coming back, JT. They signed him to a huge contract this past season, and I would ultimately like him back in the lineup. But I'm not freaking out the way that most teams probably would about their backup catcher having to start a couple of games here.
I miss our backup catcher. Alejandro Kirk got put on a 60-day IL, so no large adult son roaming around the bases for a while. And now Reese McGuire's back, and there are too many jokes being made about Reese McGuire beating off the competition that I don't want to make here.
I forgot about that story. Yeah. Anyway, it should be they lost JT Realmuto. It'll be interesting to see what they do with this lot with these lineups here this weekend. So, of course, Didi Gregorius was another guy who hurt himself, and he's a guy with Tommy John surgery a few years ago and was having shoulder soreness. So it seems like he's set to miss some time here as well. So not that he's been having the best season, but it actually allows for more playing time for a guy like Nick Maton, who has come up to the big leagues and been nothing but a success so far this season. The Phillies lineup has been a little all over the place all year. McCutchen started in a really bad slump. They gave him a couple of off days and he's come back a totally different guy. I'm not talking about, you know, National League MVP like he was in Pittsburgh, but a good leadoff hitter who's gotten a little bit more spark in his bat. He looks more confident, more relaxed, more whatever you want to call it out there. Like just finally getting him back just kind of into his everyday rhythm. That's been huge. The team's already gone through like five different center fielders. They're on Odubel Herrera, who they didn't want to bring up for, you know, a variety of reasons.
Garbage person, Odubel Herrera. Yes, yeah. I'm so, aware of him.
Yeah. So everyone's aware of him. Everyone has a lot of opinions about him being on the roster and guys like that playing in Major League Baseball. But in terms of on-field production, has definitely been the best center fielder for the Phillies this season. So he remains in the lineup. Bryce Harper overall has had, it's had pretty good production this season. A lot of people get upset with him because it's like, hey, we paid this guy $330 million and he doesn't come up in this big spot or that big spot, but you know, he's still pretty good. I don't think he's on that level of like a top five player in baseball, but based upon what I expected when they signed him, I think since he's been with the Phillies, he has been that and continued that this season. Gene Segura went on the injured list with a torn quad and has returned and really hasn't missed a beat since. Rhys Hoskins at first base is relatively inconsistent. And the biggest concern for me has been Alec Bohm, who was second last year in rookie of the year voting and has been in a really bad slump to start the year here. He hits a lot of balls hard that do end up in outs, but his strikeout rate has taken a little bit of a climb as strikeout rates continue to rise all across Major League Baseball. And the Phillies as a whole strike out even relative to the rest of baseball a lot. So that's certainly concerning. And a guy who is a little bit of a, last year anyway, looked like an old school hitter and seemed like he didn't go for launch angle swings. Didn't look like he liked to strike out. He would work a lot of good at bats. And this season, maybe some more pitchers are figuring him out. And again, even the balls he's hitting hard don't seem to fall in the right places for him. So that's the guy I'd really like to see get going as well. But a lot of inconsistency, and it's like same old, can't get everyone going at the same time. And that's why you have a lot of low offensive productions, even sometimes in the games that they win. And it was ironic that they actually came back and won that game in Washington the other day because they only had one run until the ninth inning. They tie it with a home run in the ninth and put up some home runs, or not some home runs, but put up some runs in the 10th. And then in that game on Tuesday, they actually tacked on runs late in the game, which they have struggled to do all season. I forget what the stat was, but like their on-base percentage and their slugging percentage, I might be tied for last in Major League Baseball past the sixth inning or when they have a lead. I have to double check on what that exact stat was. But the bottom line is this team has been bad at piling on runs throughout the course of a game, which leaves them in a lot of close games. That's why they had 7 one-run games in a row earlier this season.
Well, the Blue Jays were able to pile a few more runs on there. Unfortunately, Roddy Tellez just lined into a double play to end the inning, but it's still 7-0 Toronto. So that's kind of cool. And if you figured that was going to happen and you went to betonline.ag, you could have turned your knowledge into winnings. It's a fast and easy way dare say, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, be it MLB, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, WNBA, MLS, whatever you want, head over to BetOnline and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, contest information, news, odds, info, everything you need is at betonline.ag. And when you sign up today and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you will receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for the playoffs. So head over to betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And I feel you on that, Dan. I mean, like I said, it seemed like every game I watched from the Blue Jays last season, they had the same problem. They could not put the boot down when it came to those late game scenarios. That's why watching an inning like that ninth inning against Atlanta yesterday was so tantalizing. Just watching them stare down a closer who, admittedly, Will Smith has had his struggles this season, but just staring him down and just knocking him around the park with ease. That's the hallmark of a good team. That's a team that is not willing to let an opponent up off the mat. And it's something that this young squad had to learn what to do in order to make sure they're not in more of those one game situations, because, you know, as much as I praise the bullpen, we don't have Rafael Dolis at the moment. He's on EIL temporarily with a calf strain. We don't have David Phelps because he got a line drive in the back. We don't have Anthony Castro, who's been a miraculous waiver find, but is now dealing with arm soreness. We don't have Julian Merriweather because he's on the 60-day IL because that's where he lives. He's either looking completely dominant or he's on the 60-day IL. There's no in-between with Julian Merriweather. So as much as guys like Joel Pamps and Tyler Chatwood and Travis Bergen and AJ Cole have stepped up, it puts a lot of pressure on Jordan Romano to be the shutdown guy for the Blue Jays. And so far he's answered the bell. I know you're probably not watching the Blue Jays games very often, but if you watched him in that ninth inning with a 4-run lead, a situation where if we had Ken Giles in that spot, he probably would have given up 3 runs and made it 8-7. Jordan Romano instead comes in and just proceeds to make Austin Riley and Jeff Mathis and who else did he face in that inning? I think it was Dansby Swanson was his first K. But all three of them looked like they had no clue what to do with Jordan Romano's slider. And that's been a big difference for the Blue Jays, is having so many weapons they can actually deploy back there, that the loss of Merriweather and Castro and Dolis, and I should technically mention Kirby Yates because he is technically a Blue Jay right now, even though, you know, literally never stepped foot on the mound in a regular season game. But being able to deploy those guys, being able to deploy a Tyler Chatwood who has reinvented himself as a reliever, a Ryan Barucki who has handled the transition to the bullpen with grace and complete ability to focus on two of his pitches, Joel Pamps, who we won the tug of war with Boston with to secure his services to come out there and put up an ERA that is probably not going to stay at 220, but the fact that he's managing to dance around hits and get outs, that's good enough. I will take that at this moment. But you're absolutely right, Dan. It makes it a lot easier to swallow guys like Pamps and Bergen and Trent Thornton in those late game situations when you know they're working with a 3 or 4 run lead as opposed to a 1 run lead.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired of seeing David Hale in high leverage spots. Never works out. He served up a grand slam to Trevor Story in Colorado in a close game a couple of weekends ago. It's just brutal. And on the one hand, I get it. Like, the bullpen's taxed every day because you're consistently in these one-run games. And it's the way they're getting in one-run games. Like, they'll get out sometimes to a 4 or 5-run lead, and the other team slowly comes creeping back. And it's another night that you have to go to Hector Neris as your closer, or you have to go to Jose Alvarado in a big spot, or you're forced to go down to the depths of your bullpen, like a David Hale, like a Matt Moore, who started the year in the rotation, just isn't very good, like an Eniel De Los Santos. You have Archie Bradley sitting on your injured list. Like, you can't. Sam Coonrod has been excellent for the Phillies so far this season, and there's been a lot of discussion as to whether he should move into the closer's role, because Hector Neris has been the closer for a while. for this team. And some people don't really like him. I think he's been pretty solid. I think he's been pretty good. I kind of would rather use Coonrod matching up earlier in games and high leverage spots. Hey, send him out to get these outs. And now he has not been good at keeping inherited runners from scoring. But when he starts his own inning, he's usually lights out. So there's been a number of directions that this bullpen has gone. Connor Brogdon's another guy I forgot to mention. It's certainly an improvement over last year, but there have still been games where they have blown the lead late, or they just don't have that big of a lead to begin with. So you're forced to use your high leverage guys in game one of a series. And by the time you get to game two and three, the other teams on the seventh, eighth reliever, Matt Moore, De Los Santos, Ranger Suarez, whoever you want to plug in there. And that's just not sustainable over the course of a season. So I would like to see more sizable wins. They won 12-2 the other night in Atlanta, and that ended up being the final game of a 5-game winning streak. And we're like, holy hell, where the hell did that come from? And it has proven to be an outlier. It's not usually how this team rides. They usually aren't able to tack on extra runs late. And even the other night, they get a 6-2 win, and Hector Neris comes in just for the inning of work because he hadn't pitched in a couple of days. But not every ninth inning has to be a high wire act. Like, winning by a few extra runs or getting insurance runs late in game is not a bad thing. And unfortunately, they just leave a lot of things on the table. It almost seems like they're playing for the entertainment value, and, you know, God forbid they comfortably cruise to a win once in a while. Every win is like, you're on the edge of your seat saying, well, they got away with that one.
Yeah. And to add to your point about the bullpen, it really doesn't help when your bullpen has the second highest rate of inherited runners scoring against it. According to Baseball Reference, 24 or 47 inherited runners have scored. That's second worst, only behind the Twins, which I think I found out why they're at the bottom of the Central, because 33 of 50 inherited runners have scored on them. So, the Phillies have done very well to be able to manage around a bullpen that's been ineffectual and off-season signings that have been ineffectual. You mentioned Matt Moore. Archie Bradley's injured. Brandon Kinsler hasn't been as good as he was in Miami. So to be able to work around that and even put Philadelphia in a position where they can succeed in spite of that bullpen, which, I mean, we watched last year. We knew they were going to have to succeed in spite of their bullpen. But
worst bullpen in 90 years in baseball history. It's incredible.
My God. I know. Like you said, 7 runs in a 7-inning game.
Ridiculous.
Still love that. But it does offer hope that maybe if they can figure out this bullpen a little later in the season, like, you have Neris, who's good. You have Sam Coonrod, who's been very effective. Jose Alvarado, who everyone in Blue Jays land knows who Jose Alvarado is. It's like, if you get Archie Bradley back and he's, you know, the effective Archie Bradley, that's a solid 4 that you can use. And then maybe you are a trade deadline acquisition away from building a better bullpen. Hopefully works a little better than getting Heath Hembree from Boston.
And Brandon Workman, names that not be repeated. Yeah.
I was trying to remember who the other name was.
So bad.
Lit.
Automatic lit loss up every time those guys come in.
Oh my God. But yeah, I guess there's still hope. You just gotta, you know, make sure you actually get the good pieces from Minnesota or the good pieces from Detroit, as opposed to the Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree of the world. All right, the rant's coming in the final segment, I promise. But if you need to fuel up and get ready for it, why not do so with a Built Bar? Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors plus the occasional limited time flavor. They have coconut, almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. So many good things. I'm a mint brownie girl. I will not lie. I like mint and I like chocolate. If you think I'm a monster for that, I mean, I'll take it. So you can get a box of your favorite flavor or get a mixed box where you get 2 of each and know that you're getting a healthy snack loaded with protein, under 180 calories, and just 5 grams of sugar per bar. So you can get all those amazing flavors, whatever you like, by going to builtbar.com and using the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your first order. So that's LOCK15, all one word, no spaces, for 15% off at builtbar.com, and get you some tasty bars in your mailbox.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast, Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
For sure. I'll kind of wrap it up on this, just kind of looking around baseball. We were talking beforehand. So you're in Halifax right now. So how far is that? Should be more up to date on my Canadian geography. How far is that from Toronto? Would you be going to any games in a regular season? Obviously not playing in Toronto. Like, are people in Canada like dying to go to a game? Because things are opening back up here in the U.S. and they just announced here in Philadelphia on June 12th, they're going to go full capacity, and they've been like 20, 25%, 50%. It's been great, but I know things different in Canada, and the broadcasters aren't even traveling. They've called every single game since the pandemic started off a monitor. A lot of Toronto's fan base is not in the Toronto area because it spans all over Canada. So give me some insight into that and just what you've liked from the baseball season just thus far as a whole.
So for reference, Halifax is a 24-hour drive from Toronto. So, and I'm a girl who needs a beauty sleep. So I'm not making that drive for a game. If I go to a game, it's extensively planned out and I'm flying and, you know, meeting people up. That is what I did for the last game that I attended, which was the Bo Bichette extra innings home run win over the Yankees in 2019, which was beautiful. But it's been tough to watch from afar. I mean, we're aware of the situation up here in Canada. We know what's going to happen. So it's been tough to watch them. What's even tougher, though, is the fact that, you know, apparently the blackout range for Blue Jays baseball is the entire freaking country. So it doesn't matter that it would take me an entire day to drive to actually watch a game. You're not getting any money out of me or anyone in New Brunswick or Saskatchewan or BC or anyone else. They decide to black out everyone, which is absolutely asinine. I know how weird these blackout rules are. I have a friend in Iowa who's blacked out from 6 markets just because of Iowa's location in that area. But some of these blackout rules are so asinine that if MLB actually wants to make it accessible for people to watch this game and gain appreciation for this game, they have to be more open to other avenues. They have to be more open. And like, I see them like, oh, we're going to put games on YouTube. Great. Who's actually finding those games on YouTube? Who's actually reaching? How are you giving them baseball on a consistent basis? It's like, oh, we have one game, so I hope you like the Royals. No one outside Kansas City likes the Royals. You have to give them more options. You have to make it more accessible. You can't just cordon it off. They don't even have Blue Jays games on MLB TV because Rogers, the company that owns the Blue Jays, is like, we want them on our app so people have to pay for the app, which, no, I am absolutely not paying for your stupid overpriced app to watch the Blue Jays on a cell phone. Put them on a screen I can actually look at without having to try and discern if the tiny little speck that Aaron Nola is throwing is a ball or a strike. You monsters, figure this out.
Is extraordinary. So how do you usually watch? Are they not on cable in Halifax? Or you didn't even give me the solution to it that you found, if you have found one.
They are on cable. I am fortunate to get cable through my apartment building, so I can watch them on TV. But that is not easy for everyone to do, and certainly not easy for younger viewers. Like, I mean, I would not have cable if it didn't come with my internet and power being paid by my apartment building. So I don't think that is a viable solution to try and reach younger viewers who are watching on YouTube, on Twitch, on Facebook. Like, you can be like, oh, we'll toss you a game. We'll toss you Pirates Reds. And that's not going to work. You have to make the big games more accessible to a wider audience if you want to actually grow. And stop making games end at midnight. I know my time zone's weird, so whatever. I'm going to be staying up until 2 a.m.
I was going to say these late starts. So because I have the Philly schedule printed out right here. These games this weekend. So tonight's game is, for instance, was originally supposed to be at 6:37, and they move it back to 7:37 Eastern because of, I guess, the daylight and trying to avoid the heat down in Florida, which is really 8:37 for you. So if that game goes 3 hours, even a 3 hour flat game is ending 11:35, 11:40. If that goes 3 hours, 20 minutes, even deeper than that, which it easily could, you're right. You're at midnight, a little bit past it. And for the large portion of Canada, that's an hour ahead of the Eastern time zone in the United States. Yeah, it could be problematic trying to stay up for that every single night and have to get up and go to work or do anything the next day.
Like, I'm an East Coast girl with a West Coast sleep schedule. So that's not as big an issue for me. But like any kid who's trying to watch a game.
Yeah, bedtime's the first pitch. Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're not even seeing it. And they wonder why the younger generation isn't interested in like, oh, maybe we should limit pitching changes. No, first of all, get the ball in play. Make players actually make plays. Two, get them on at a time when people can actually watch them. Like, you can split it. There's East and West Coast. There are enough teams. You can do that. But actually put games on to where the resolution and all the high tension at bats might actually be viewable by a younger audience instead of having to be told by their parents or grandparents if they stayed up late enough. And the grandparents, that's not even a guarantee. So there are a myriad of things that baseball can try and do to grow its audience, especially at a grassroots level, but they don't seem to want to do it. They just want to stick superficial things on there. And until they actually make bold decisions, like, you know, lowering the pitcher mound to try and increase offense or actually banning shifts, they're not going to do it. They're not going to get the increase in action that they desire. And it's going to continue floundering until they actually make changes.
Okay, so I agreed with most of what you said until you mentioned the banning shifts part. I am like very against that. So we could sit here and debate that all day.
Look, I know Kevin Biggio is able to beat it with his bunts most of the time, but it's still like that's a waste of time moving everyone over there. And I play third base, so maybe I'm a little skewed on it, but
yeah, I guess my take on it is, look, I think you can change certain rules to that don't ruin the integrity of the game. And I'm a new age baseball fan. I'm not one of these old guys. If like, things should be the way they used to be. But I think you are breaking a fundamental rule of like, hey, you have eight fielders. You can put them wherever you want. And they're major league hitters. Like, don't ultimately they have to make the, like, why are you making the adjustment for them? And it is my argument to it. I know some guys have learned how to bunt to beat it, but if you can only hit to one field, I feel like you should be able to defend against that. And there should just be other ways to improve the number of balls in play so that shift is more or less impactful. And because more balls in play, you would beat the shift more often anyway. I'd be in favor of things to try and just cut down on the strikeouts, things to improve offense in general, make the game more marketable. The shift is not one of them that I'm willing to, that I would look at first, but I understand why people view it that way.
Yeah, and I do think we ultimately agree that more balls in play is the solution. I mean, when Wade Miley's out here throwing no-hitters, I mean, that's a sign that maybe you need to make a change or two, just so the Wade Miley's of the world aren't getting no-hitters and entering that Philip Humber level of, wait, that guy actually did throw a no-hitter? What the heck?
I also understand that they don't really have to market to someone like me specifically. Like, I'm going to watch baseball no matter what. It could be 27 strikeouts. I'll sit there and be like, wow, that was a good pitch. That was a good pitch. This guy tried to hit a home run there. It was a 2-1 pitch selection. It was good, bad, whatever. But to a broader audience, it does seem like Major League Baseball consistently is sticking like round pegs and square holes to try and solve some of these problems. Or I guess it would be square pegs and round holes is the expression to solve some of these problems. And it's not effective. And they're not actually viewing the real problem. Keep the game the same as it is. You're right. Let's just start with making it so you could watch on your computer or on MLB TV or on whatever and not keep it from people. I also am fortunate enough to the blackout. I live 20 minutes from Citizens Bank Park, so I'm in the Philadelphia region. I'm only blacked out for them, but I also have cable and see the Phillies and Sixers and Flyers and every Eagles game every week. So that's not a problem for me. But it is a problem for others, and it does seem like they could be better at that. AJ Andrews, this was great. Where can, obviously, on Locked On Blue Jays, where can people find you on Twitter, on the podcast, anything else you got going on these days?
Like you said, Locked On Jays. It's on the Locked On Podcast Network. Download it wherever you get fine programming, such as Dan's Locked On Phillies. And you can find me on Twitter at @A_J_Andrews. The underscores are there because Twitter is dumb and I haven't been on it much because it's dumb. But we'll see. I'm feeling a little better, so maybe I can try and be on there a little more.
You have a good... I don't imagine that many people outside of the Philadelphia region are familiar with him, but Dan Baker, who's been the public address announcer for the Phillies for years and years and years, loves to drag out names that are abbreviate, like an initialed name. So you have a good Dan Baker name. Like you would step up to the plate and he'd be like, A.J. Andrews. And it's every time Real Muto stepped up to the plate, or a guy like, and it's good when the guy's on the road too, like for years when he was in Colorado and the Yankees come in this year too. You get a really long DJ LeMahieu or AJ Pollock. And it's become a it's not even like a bit. It's just like everyone knows that that's coming. And I don't know how he got into that specifically, but it's phenomenal. And so that's what made me think of it when you said that Twitter makes you have like hyphens or underscores after each one of your letters. But AJ, this was great. You know, hopefully we have a good series this weekend down in Dunedin, which is still weird to me. I've seen plenty of games there. I actually have been to this ballpark a few years ago when I went down to spring training. It's the closest ballpark to where the Phillies play in Clearwater, and they were playing there one day, so I made the drive over. And they've made renovations since, so it's apparently even nicer now and actually like equipped to hold major league games. And it's funny because I can't even picture them hosting major league games there because across the street, it's like there's no complex at all. It's just like in the middle of Dunedin in a town.
I was going to say, I've been there. I was there in 2016. Doing some work, and it did not look ready to Major League Baseball.
It does feel weird that they're playing down there, but I guess it'll feel similar to the Phillies playing in Buffalo a season ago. And look, obviously from my perspective, I hope the Phillies for the second time in a row can win 2 of 3. Obviously, you know, you're hoping for the Blue Jays to,
I'm sad the Phillies aren't going to be in Buffalo this year, because I wanted Bryce Harper to try and hit a ball onto that highway on ramp.
Yeah, it's true. You don't really have any landmarks to really try and hit in Dunedin, I suppose. But that highway became like a thing last year, and they're going to return there later
like
this season.
That was the thing in MVP baseball. They had the home run derby, and they had like all this stuff beyond the yard, and you could like hit the car for 100 points. Like, I would give the Phillies 100 runs if Bryce Harper actually hit a moving car with a home run.
Like, you have to time it right. Yeah. You can hit some car in Clearwater, too, in right field. You can sometimes get it a little bit onto the highway or with the road there. So it is possible. He certainly has a number of shots at it in spring training, but yeah, looking forward to the series coming up this weekend. And yeah, we'll definitely go from there. And hopefully, like I said, Aaron Nola, things I'm looking for, Aaron Nola to have a good start. And maybe the Phillies can actually steal a game here tonight.
Maybe, but I wouldn't count on it.
AJ, thank you for your time. This was fun.
You too, Dan. It's been a pleasure.